Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you today.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing very well, and want to visit today with you a little bit about what's going on with those best friends and civil libertarians in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
They must have cleaned up their act.
That's
because
right.
The Congress is, you know, they've been notified by the administration, by Pompeo, that they meet the requirements and it's okay and they're our friends. And we will now promote weaponry going there, and then we're going to send them some Patriot missiles,
uh-huh.
defensive purposes, of
Only.
Course. So that's a little bit of a different attitude than a month or so ago after the Khashoggi murder. I mean, everybody was up in arms, and they did a good thing in the Senate. They
yeah.
brought forth for the first time and said, this is so outrageous that we have to disengage from this war, you know, in Yemen. We don't want to have any part about it. And it passed with a nice vote. It
yeah.
was a majority vote, but it was a nice vote. But it really was using the War Powers Resolution 1973, which has been sitting around. And that in itself has a few pros and cons. But anyway, they used it in the proper manner. And yet back then, to make the real point that we shouldn't be allies with Saudi Arabia, it was, you know, sent over to the House. That resolution has to be passed by both the House and the Senate.
Yeah.
And you'll be shocked. It got buried in the House, and I know you recall that so vividly. So it goes over there, and who's in charge of that? This fellow called Paul Ryan. I
yeah.
don't think he's there anymore, but I don't I think that he got fired as much as he moved on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, sure.
So, but he, you know, I've seen him work deals up there and stick things in, but what he did on a rule vote for the farm bill, he sticks something in, becomes a rule of law, and says, thou shalt not ever pass that resolution and say that we can't. Oh, he said that you cannot even have a vote
yeah.
on this thing of not supporting the war in Yemen. What a stretch from the time when we thought, well, the Congress determines these things. They're the ones who said, when you can go to war, but Congress is now going, went out of their way to prohibit the Congress from even considering stopping a war that they shouldn't have ever permitted in the first place. But anyway, this is coming up now, and now we know it. And I think Pompeo had to send a notice, you know, that this is what they want to do, sell these weapons. It's no cash out of our pocket. But there's still a lot of downside to it. It's a supporting an ally to do bad things,
mm-hmm.
and it's we've become arms manufacturers, a military industrial. There's a lot of negatives, even though we're not getting these. What is $100 and some million?
Yeah, almost $200 million. Yeah.
$200 million. So the amount is insignificant, but there's a lot of downside from this.
Yeah, and you know this House vote is really pretty nasty because, you know, this is a little loophole that you and Dennis Kucinich and a few others, actually there was a good group back in the day on the Republican and Democrat side. Walter Jones would be there, you'd have a press conference, and you'd use this little loophole to force a vote, war powers vote, on some of these places that the president had sent the troops. So this kind of, first, it really goes against the absolute law of 73, regardless of what we may think about it, that you can bring this up, and they should have been able to bring it up. But Ryan buried it like this, and it was unbelievable, unbelievable what he did. And so now, as you say, sort of the murder has blown over. Washington breathes a sigh of relief. Now we can go back to business as usual.
Yep, somebody's going to make some profit over all this. But they're described as steadfast partners,
yes.
you know. And, you know, maybe they are, unfortunately for us. Maybe they are, because once again, this is one that Trump hasn't vacillated on. This is what he wanted in the primary, and this is what he did his first month in office to show how steadfast the partnership. No qualms about you know, Saudi participation in general with civil liberties. or 9/11. There are so many things, and how much pressure is put on us because they just happen to be close friends with Israelis too. So
yeah.
it's a coalition, you know, of the Saudis and Israelis and the military-industrial complex. And there's a lot of benefits that come from this, all done in the name of justice and security for the United States, because they claim this will help our security. And of course, we've expressed our opinion that these circumstances are probably making us a lot less secure.
Less secure. And Americans might ask themselves, how is it that the Saudis have such power inside the Beltway? How do they have such influence on the Hill where no matter what happens, no matter how many buses full of kids they bomb, there's not a peep coming out of Congress? Well, George O'Neill has had a piece in the American Conservative last month, a really good piece where he goes into Saudi influence. Basically, it's old-fashioned. It's called money. It's called buying influence, buying votes. There are scores of American PR and other lobby firms on Capitol Hill in Washington who are paid vast sums of money, millions and millions of dollars. And that money is basically laundered into the campaign coffers, as George wrote, of American politicians. It's really an old-fashioned money laundering. And it's just hilarious as we sit here, once again, we're still talking about Russiagate, where the Russians took out some crazy Yosemite Sam ads and supposedly gave Trump the White House, talking about all this nonsense, when here you have really right in front of you, there's a report, you see how much money they're spending to literally meddle in the elections, foreign money, and nobody wants to see. You know, it's like the Casablanca. There's gambling going on here.
Well, it sounds to me like you're not accepting the very glib reason for why we need to help our friends over there and send them these weapons. These are defensive weapons. And the Yemenis, believe it or not, they're shooting some missiles into Saudi Arabia.
How dare they?
And that, of course, is defensive. They're defending themselves and vice versa. But guess what? Everything they do in Yemen, who gets blamed for that? You know, there may be a cheerleader over there, but it's a lot less involvement than a lot of people say. They say, well, this is what we have to really do. This is we have to, you know, we're really blaming Iran on it,
yeah,
and get the blame for that. So that's why we have to be determined to more of these missiles go there. And it fits into the money machine, too, you know, whether it's, you know, military-industrial complex or the intrigue of international finances. Oil has to come be involved in this. So it almost sounds like the deep state to me.
And it really is a proxy war with Iran, even though it's mostly made up. The Iranians aren't in Yemen. I mean, it's complete fantasy. But, you know, we put up an article on the Ron Paul Institute website this morning. Really good piece, a pretty frightening piece. John Bolton has brought in a new top aide in the National Security Council. Yeah, did you see that?
Yeah.
From the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, which they call Israel's think tank in D.C. This guy is a super, super, super Iran hawk. He wants regime change. And so this is what it's all about. This is why the troops aren't coming out of Syria, it doesn't seem like. This is why we have these guys coming in. This is why we're talking about the Saudis. It's all about Iran.
You know, we've talked about some of the big reasons why we oppose this, but there are some who have written about this, and they point out some other things. They might not be in the same category, but they are important. And that is, by selling these weapons, we transfer technology.
Yeah.
You know, and the technology, it might even end up in the hands of the radicals, which it has in the past, and we've had to fight our own weapons at times. So this technology goes over and ends up, and even the weaponry itself sometimes can get in the hands of others. But it doesn't seem to bother people as long as they made a few bucks along the way.
And that's sick. Can you imagine? And this is literally happening. U.S. troops are facing U.S. weapons in places like Syria. Can you imagine having to tell the parent or wife or husband of a service member that your loved one was killed with our own weapons that we sent over there to a bunch of bad guys, you know, to bring freedom to market? It's really sick, you know, just for a profit.
Well, I really get torn up when I see these the use of our wounded military personnel, and they've had tremendous medical care, and they recover, and mentally they seem to survive, a lot of them. At the same time, you know, instead of me seeing, my goodness, you know, putting them on a pedestal so high, and it's not much you can do, because I look at it and I see it as such a tragedy. all the people now that are back at home, and it isn't only the military personnel that's been severely wounded and have amputations, it's the families. You know, how many families have been broken up? How many marriages have been broken up over this? And how many kids have lost their father and their mother? You know, and this sort of thing. So it goes on and on. But the big lie is convincing the American people that we're on a holy crusade. Everything we do there is a holy crusade. And that's why when we see these openings where the Senate finally stands up and says about this, maybe the people should be challenged about the holiness of our crusade. And, of course, if you recall, that came up a few times in the debates. Yeah. And I had to gently but strongly take a position that this is tragic and they shouldn't use people like this to justify a war that is illegal and immoral and all of the rest.
And meanwhile, they're making big bucks off of this war where they send these guys off. You know, in O'Neill's piece in American Conservative, he cited a really interesting, fascinating study that I mentioned earlier, but it really tracked what the Saudi lobby was doing in Washington. Here's a shocker, right? They tracked which Senate offices had the most visits from Saudi lobbyists. You'll never guess. Senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham.
Oh, my God.
Number one on the Saudi list. So that explains, I think, a lot of his behavior. He's raking in the money, pushing war, and he's going to have a big paycheck when he gets out of the Senate. And as you talk about, all these broken service members are paying the price.
Yeah, you know, and Graham is probably the top dog for servicing them. But there are several others. There's a big becoming pretty close, and there will be a replacement, you know, of Graham when he leaves the Congress and goes into the really big bucks.
Private sector.
Yeah, there you go.
But, you know, the big question now is Pelosi. And David Swanson, who's an anti-war activist, was tweeting out earlier today, hey, progressive Congress, progressive House, you're in gear now, you're in the saddle. What are you going to do about these wars? And so it's a real big question. Will Pelosi make a move? Will she undo what Ryan did? Will she allow a vote on the floor on this Yemen thing? And it's hard to know. That I read an article recently from In These Times, which is a left-leaning magazine, criticizing Pelosi for refusing to meet Yemeni American anti-war activists and instead meeting with the Saudi ambassador. So it's tough to know what she'll do. She's voiced support for it after it was politically okay to do so. But that is the big question. Pelosi could turn the switch on this. She could allow the vote. The Senate could go back and vote, and you could really see some action.
Well, I wished I could get excited by your tinge of optimism, and I'm always wanting to be hopeful, too. But just from my experience, she was one of the best bipartisan members of Congress, because don't you think she probably knew about what Ryan was doing with that rule vote? I mean, that couldn't have been silent. But they're politicians, and they play it. And if she's now answering to her growing progressive left wing, you know, not progressive in the good sense of the word, but that progressive element, you know, in the Congress, and she will have to pay attention. She's good at politics, so maybe that pressure, it'd be ironic if some pressure from some of these really wild left-wingers may come through as, well, we're sick and tired of spending the money over there, spend it all on socialized medicine here, you know. And so it could happen. So we'll see.
You're right. I remember those photos of she and John Boehner kissing and everything, so it's probably not. But really, I hope that there's a little bit of pressure on her, and it'll tell whether we're right or whether they're right, you know, that really there only is one party in Washington. But so the big question is, now that the Saudis have gotten a couple of $100 million worth of Patriot missiles, will the Senate now, which has flexed its muscles, put the kibosh on future big offensive arms sales to the Saudis? My vote is they won't. There will be some heroic struggles. Senator from Kentucky has been very good on this, as have a few other senators. But at the end of the day, in Washington, money still talks.
Boy, that's for sure, and that's a shame. And I guess that's going to last for a long time. But what we need to do is eventually eliminate the fact that the government has so much to sell. We have lobbyists lobbying everything in Congress for umpteen reasons. It's because the government's too big, we're too involved, and why should we have foreign countries being such strong lobbyists for their piece of the pie and for us to send our armies to protect them? If you had a foreign policy that was completely different and we weren't selling weapons around the world, there'd be less incentive for them to spend this money. They might be more willing to spend on products that we would buy in this country and the money being spent here instead of building the bombs and the weapons they get overseas and end up in the hands of our enemies. At the same time, they get blown up and they say, well, it pushed up the GDP. GDP is going up, so we must be a very, very wealthy country, and it doesn't help the average person. Oh, yeah, but it helps labor. Yeah, the people who build those airplanes and bombs and all these things, yeah, they do. They make a good salary. But believe me, they don't compare to the average middle-class citizen who's suffering from this type of a policy, both a foreign policy and economic policy. That is why the middle class is being wiped out. And it's also the reason why there's an opening to these people who are radical socialists and they're not getting booed off the stage is because there is a discrepancy. And the real challenge we have is pointing out that this discrepancy in wealth, it doesn't come from freedom. It isn't that we have too much freedom. It's that we have too much government manipulating. And as Daniel so well described, how this money is laundered throughout the world and the special interests get richer and the bankers benefit by it. So this would disappear if we had a proper-sized government, which means that we could start with a constitutional government and one that would never allow us to be involved in a war that's not declared, which means that there wouldn't be much debate on what we should do about troops in Syria or any place else in the Middle East or the Far East or in Africa. We'd just bring them home and we'd spend all that money here at home rather than throwing it down a drain and looking for more enemies. And then we pretend that we are so wealthy and so smart that we will do all the economic planning. And if they don't do as we say, we will put sanctions on them and we'll blockade them from the financial markets. Tell you what, people get aggravated with that, and I think it'll come to an end, unfortunately, with a serious downturn in the economy and a serious threat to our liberties. But once again, though, we look at that as an opportunity to present the case for liberty, because that is what we need. We do not suffer from too little government. We suffer from too much government. We need more liberty. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report, and come back soon.